All right, everybody. Well, welcome back. I'm really excited about this one. Dan and I are remote in St. George, but we still wanted to bring you a really, really good episode. So we're gonna go ahead and play the Beau Foreman card. We've had Beau on deck to do one of these for a while. I know when Dan and I started this, and we were talking about like the guests we wanted to have on. Beau was like right in that first crop of names. But we haven't been able to do it yet. I'm kind of surprised this took so long. So, welcome, Beau Foreman. Like credentials wise, Beau, you're probably one of the most like qualified people to talk about a lot of the stuff we do. But if you could give like, the elevator pitch on your background and your resume, what would it be?
Yeah, so most importantly, I like to ride bikes.
Okay.
Second, I have a degree in physical therapy. I graduated with my degree in therapy, physical therapy in 1994. Went back to school, earned my PhD in neurobiology and anatomy with a through the neurobiology and anatomy at School of Medicine at University of Utah with an emphasis in anatomy. And I'm a professor at the U and I do research in biomechanics.
So, how long have you been riding bikes?
Well, for about 47 years, 48 years.
Holy smokes! How did you? Because you grew up in Wyoming, right?
Correct. Yeah.
Did you get into it as a kid out there? Or?
Yeah, I started riding BMX when I was little. Started racing BMX in middle school, elementary and middle school. Converted over to mountain biking when it became a sport. And I've been doing that ever since. And I get on a road bike only once a year.
Well,
That's usually to do load a
you've also got, it's Beau's Big Dumb Ride, where you take your Hakka on Shoreline and you do like 100 miles of, like mountain bike trails on your like that. I think a lot of people maybe know your name from Dan talking about that ride. What's the 411
Well,
on that ride?
I think Bo's Big Dumb Ride, it scares me so bad it keeps me up at night sometimes. Like, I just can't even, like, I like doing big rides. I like riding all day long. And I just don't ever think I could possibly do Bo's Big Dumb Ride. It's just, I cramp up just thinking about it.
So get, for those of for the listeners who haven't heard of that, Bo, what's Bo's Big Dumb Ride?
Yeah, so and Dan, we'll find out this year when you do it with me. But every year I take off from my house in Bountiful, Utah, and then I ride up Skyline Drive. I hook into the a segment of running trail. It's pretty much running trail that goes from Skyline, top of Skyline Drive over to Big Mountain. A lot of hike bike. It's an interesting segment. Then I drop down into Jeremy Ranch, come up out usually on the Olympic Park, Utah Olympic Park, climb up through there, go up to Mill Creek, drop down Mill Creek, down to Pipeline, then get down in to Salt Lake City. Then I head over to the zoo. Taking as many trails as I can. And then from the zoo, I ride up Dry Creek, hopefully, depending on temperatures. And then I ride up over Enzyme Peak, and then take the new shoreline in North Salt Lake and Bountiful up over around to the lower Mueller, and then back to my house.
So respectfully, that's ridiculous and insane. I like the first time I saw that ride, I kind of thought it was a mistake. I was like, did we patch like three rides together under one Strava file somehow? But that's
How
crazy.
many miles in vert is it again?
I think it's like 14,000 vert or something and 107 miles or something.
Yeah, it's
Wow.
just a bit much, I think.
A bit much. No. And the other question I had for you, Beau, is like, what made you decide to study what you did and go into this, like, studying the human body and then specifically to take that and turn around and teach? What was your thought process for getting into that?
Yeah, so I guess the physical therapy part was I was always an active kid, had injuries. Physical therapy seemed to help me out quite a bit. So I actually went into school initially for engineering because I had a scholarship. Decided I didn't want to be an engineer, kind of switched out of that, went into physical therapy. Once I finished, I practiced for several years, but I had a really influential teacher during my physical therapy degree, Carolee Moncourt. And she just instilled this love of the human body and anatomy. And Robin Marcus instilled this like just love of biomechanics. And I wanted to continue my education. So that's when I went back and met Dr. Kurt Albertine, and was able to get my PhD with a anatomy emphasis. But with anatomy, I really enjoy the embryology, the histology, the neuroanatomy, and the gross anatomy parts. And then I decided I wanted to, well, with a PhD, you have to do research. So in that, I started doing research in biomechanics, wrote a grant looking at compressive forces at the low back due to surgical intervention. And after that, I started running my own biomechanics labs. And that's what I've done ever since. And I bridged that gap that is sometimes formed between engineering and healthcare. I do a lot of research in degenerative diseases like Parkinson's disease, multiple sclerosis. I do a lot with amputee research. I do a lot with robotics. And that's kind of been my go-to. I do a lot with hip pathology, ankle pathology, anything related to biomechanics.
If you had to pick, and I'm going to make you pick, what is your favorite body part or bone or joint or muscle? Like, give me the number one.
What a weird question.
I'm going to make you pick one.
Oh, wow.
That's
There's
a
a
weird.
muscle called the omohyoid. And for some reason, I just find it really interesting. Omo means like shoulder, and it attaches to your shoulder blade, and it comes all the way up and attaches to your hyoid bone in your neck. And it's just this really unique muscle, has two bellies that I just find pretty fascinating.
I learned a new thing. I'd never heard of that before. If you'd said Omo, I was like, is that like a Scandinavian band or something? Like,
That'd be a good
okay.
name for one.
That we should start one. Before we jump in, I'll let Dan kind of run over the really brief sort of like announcement stuff that we have today, any sort of kind of team business.
Yeah, there's not a whole lot, but this weekend, as you know, Joe and I are in St. George because we had True Grit. And we had just a fantastic showing of Maybird Riders out at True Grit. We especially had a lot of girls out there. Lots of girls raced True Grit. And it was my first time racing it. I've ridden the course several times, but it's so much more fun racing it than just riding the course because, like, sometimes when you're just riding the course, you're kind of like out there alone and it kind of can be a little bit of a drag, but when you're racing it, there's just always people around. There's always people to try and pass, or in my case, get passed by. And I just had, like, yesterday was probably just one of the best days of my life. It was like, I just love big long rides. And then we got to go to Angelica's after. It was kind of funny. The day before the race, I was telling Joe, I'm like, hey, Joe, as soon as we're done with the race, I want to go to Angelica's. And Joe, without even thinking, just says, Angelica's is closed on Sunday, which I thought was pretty funny. But yeah, it was just a super fun day. We had some kids get just some crazy times. Like Andrew and Riker were like finished it in like 3 hours and 30 minutes. Brady Preston was right around there. Just some really, really impressive times. We had Quinn Prosky and Zoe LeClaire both tied for first on the junior.
They tied for first.
Well, they went through the finish line like exact same time. Like
Really?
I don't know which one the computer actually picked to be ahead, but it was basically a tie. In the junior shorter version. Yeah, lots of yeah, just a super fun race. I can't wait to do it again. I've we Reese Tillman, he had kind of an interesting mechanical that I thought was pretty crazy. He I think it was on right after Zen or on Zen, one of his cleats fell off and
fell off of his shoe.
Well, he ended up having to take it off, take his cleat off because one of this bolts was missing, and then it happened to his other. So he rode the second half of the entire ride without cleats on the bottom of his shoe.
That's kind of crazy. I don't know if I'd recommend that.
Yeah, exactly. That's kind of what I was thinking. He's like, yeah, it was really scary going down barrel roll. But
I'm like, you're tough, Reese. I commend you for that. judgment-wise,
he told me when he was thinking about quitting, when he realized the name of the race was True Grit, he needed to have True Grit. And I think
it's more True Disregard for Safety. But well done, Reese. That is impressive. We'll give you that.
He is just the coolest kid. And him and Calvin were just so awesome there. But it seemed like all a lot of the people that Kyson are coaching were out there, and just they were just so strong.
Notching up some results, man.
Huge improvements over last year for all those kids that he works with. So that was shout out there for sure. But yeah, it was just a really good day. We've eaten lots of good food, done lots of and the funny thing is I didn't really want to do this race because I had been sick for almost the entire month before, and my bike was I took my lefty in for service, and I that could take either 2 weeks or 2 months, you never really know. And I didn't think I was going to have my bike back, and I really didn't want to race, and I was kind of using not having a bike as an excuse. But the Friday before the race, I got the fork back, and so I figured it was a sign that I had to do it. And but I'm so glad I did, because I just had fun every second out there. It was just awesome. So, but yeah, good job everyone that did True Grit. It was awesome to see so many people. We don't have a whole lot of announcements today, but we're excited. This upcoming weekend, we've got Vail Lake, and Bo and I have been to Vail Lake quite a few times together. It's so fun. It is kind of weird. It'll be weird not having Bo there this year, but Vail Lake is just a beautiful place. And it feels so good being out there this time of year. We've got a pretty good group of kids that are going to be out there, excited for that. And those that aren't at Vail Lake should go do Red Rock Rampage. Joe will be the one there running that race. So, that's always so much fun too, to kind of blow the cobwebs off, or I don't remember how do you say that phrase exactly.
Close enough.
But if you haven't registered yet, and for any of the iCup races, we do have a discount code. It's not huge or anything. It's not going to save you tons of money, but better than nothing. And it's just capital Maybird. Just capital M Maybird 24. So that'll give you a few bucks off. The weather this week looks awesome. So coaches, if you haven't scheduled rides yet, you should schedule rides this week. It's really, really good. And on Team Snap in the coaches team, I sent out a spreadsheet that I just kind of like people to fill out. So when you schedule your rides, just fill out where you're going to be and what time on that spreadsheet. And it's just so that other people can look and see when and where people will be. And if you see five other groups at Shoreline Rotary, you might plan meeting somewhere else, just so we kind of spread things out a little bit. But yeah, and if you and coaches, if you haven't planned your skills clinics yet, get those planned. If you need help, we've got Bo and Xander that can help with those. So reach out to me and I can get someone to help you. And I think that's basically all the announcements.
I think so. And I'm really excited to get into this because, we always talk about the value of expertise and making sure you're getting your information from good places. And, I think Dr. Bo Foreman's probably about as good as it gets. I mean, I'm trying to imagine on this planet, at least. I don't know if there's anybody like more qualified. And Dan has
Well,
just like a list of nerdy questions he is so excited to ask. So.
and let me just kind of explain that, like, I just absolutely idolize Bo. He is like, I like sometimes like I almost have to pinch myself and realize I'm actually friends with him, because he is just like the coolest guy you'll ever meet. And he's also like, I remember we did like a one of my Strava polls. I asked for who is the wisest person you know, and Bo won like overwhelmingly. You know, like Blair Perks and Joe Cochran and myself all voted Bo as the wisest person. He's an amazing resource for this sport, because his knowledge of the human body is it's insane. And he's been able to kind of like whenever I have a problem, like something on my body's just not working right, I've always been able to like Bo's just been an amazing resource to kind of help figure out what's going wrong and kind of help get me going again and get back on track. And he's also very generously lent his expertise out to several of our athletes too that can go, you know, he'll just take the time to help people out and help figure out, you know, to help work through some of these issues. Because, you know, I think one thing that makes cycling more fun is if your body doesn't hurt while you're doing it. You know, I mean, that's, and being able to reduce the amount of pain you're in on the bike makes it so you can ride more and ride longer. And this is an area where I really don't think, I don't know if there's anyone better at this than Bo. Like, we're just so lucky to have him as a resource. So, thanks so much for coming on, Bo.
Sure, and a caveat, there's always someone better.
Well, in my case, that's true, but in your case, I don't.
We haven't met him yet. Oh, for Dan. Oh, there's someone. There's lots of someones that are better than you, Dan. But yeah, I'm looking at your notes here, Dan. And how long did you spend trying to narrow down which questions you want to like this must have been like weeks long, you know?
No, this is some, excuse me, this is stuff I've just been wondering all the time. Today I kind of wanted, because we're gonna have Bo on for a bunch of different things just because he knows so much stuff. We couldn't fit it all into episode, but today I was really curious about just about like stretching and foam rolling and those kind of things, you know, like and that's something I've always wondered, because like we'll start with my first question with a little background first is like you know, when you're on like when you listen to a lot of like sports podcasts and look at things videos on YouTube and you know, if you're kind of getting your information from those sources, like stretching kind of appears to be just something that people used to do in the old days, and it's bad, and like static stretching's bad, but dynamic stretching's good. And but with a lot of the like the hip pain and the knee pain I've dealt with, Bo's had me do some stretching. So my first question, Bo, is can you talk about like is stretching good or bad, or when is it good or bad, or can you maybe just talk about that for a second?
Yeah, of course. If I start getting off on tangents, bring me back.
Oh, we love tangents. This is,
but think about the two people who run this podcast. Like, this is a very
that is true. We may be here all day.
yeah.
So stretching's always been an interesting question, and so I think we have to look at why we do stretching. And I mean, if you look at it, the idea is to increase the range of motion and in decrease any resistance to movement. But if you don't have a problem, why would you want to overstretch? Okay, so that's what I kind of want to bring it down to. So think of a teeter totter. If you have a teeter totter, and let's say, you know, it's very similar to your pelvis rocking back and forth on your femur, okay, on your thigh. So as our pelvis tips one way and tips the other way, there's muscles that assist that motion back and forth. Now, if one side of that teeter-totter is tight, the other side actually has to pull it down to move it. So you're using muscle that you might otherwise not need to use. So if you can have that teeter-totter, you know, like bearings, move just very freely and not have any resistance, then it's going to be more efficient. However, if that efficiency is already there, you just need to maintain it. You don't need to make it more flexible. So that's kind of what I like to get into initially. So there's different reasons we stretch too, different tissues. So if you think about our body, we have, you know, fascia, we have muscle, we have nerves, we have all these different structures. Now, any of them can become taut. And I'm not saying due to contractility of the, like a muscle contracting, that's not what I mean, but anytime we don't use something, it typically shortens or decreases length. So for example, if you always had your arm straight, or for example, when someone has a surgery and they have a limb immobilized, the, you know, in a position, it's hard to move it once the immobilization's removed. And the same thing kind of happens with the body. It's not just the muscles that become restricted. So basically with stretching, why are we doing it? Well, we can be stretching anything. Muscles, nerves, there's tendon gliding or nerve gliding that we could do and so forth. Now, what are the types of stretching? So this is where we kind of get more into the nuts and bolts of it. So there's static stretching, and static stretching is a lot of what people think about when they think about stretching. It's holding a position, you know, 15 to 60 seconds and doing that repetitively in a range that's uncomfortable. So you're actually trying your best to deform tissue, trying to stretch it so that it actually, when you're done, you have a lengthened result. Now, static stretching has been shown to increase range of motion in a lot of studies. Some show it hasn't, but most studies show it has. Then there's dynamic stretching. Dynamic stretching is really where you're moving within an available range. So this is something you do, for example, you might be a little tight, but you're able to, through movement, be able to get into your regular range of motion. So this would be activities like kicking, you know, squatting, different things where you're actually arm circles, lunges, things like that, where you're actually going through a full range of motion of your body, of your joint, but not really stressing it or trying to get additional range of motion by deforming tissues. There's other types of stretching too. There's something called ballistic stretching, which I'm not a big fan of. But it's where you really like jump and force yourself into a range that is not where you beyond your normal range of motion. And there's people who believe in that. I don't. So I'm not even going to talk about ballistic stretching. There's something called proprioceptive neuromuscular facilitation. That's where you use different techniques to increase stretching, primarily for static. For example, if you're stretching and then you contract the muscle and then you stretch it again, you're going to get a little bit more range by doing it that way. One thing you'll notice though that I didn't include is foam rolling as a type of stretching, and I'll talk a little bit more about that later. Foam rolling is just kind of a combination of different avenues to create a stretching activity. So, is it bad? Well, overstretching is bad. If you overstretch, yes, you're going to create immobility in a joint. That's super rare. You might see it in athletes that have to get into really abnormal ranges of motions that wouldn't be typical of the human body. And so for most of us, that's not the case. I think for most of us, stretching is just important to maintain our normal range of motion. So if you're always doing the same activity over and over and over, and never get out of that activity's range of motion, but your body has the ability to go more, that's when stretching becomes important. For example, someone might have tight hamstrings, right? And that's where static stretching might be good. So having a program where you're stretching statically on a regular basis to maintain or get to that normal range of motion is good. However, there have been studies that have shown for high force production activities like jumping, things like that, that static stretching can actually decrease force output. So I wouldn't necessarily recommend it right before a race, but if you have decreased range of motion, it should be part of your regular training to be able to maintain that range of motion. As we know, Dan, you lack normal range of motion.
Yes, there's an understatement there too. So
yeah. So in your case, absolutely, like static stretching is really something that could be very useful for you to do to be able to get back to that normal range of motion. Once you get to that normal range of motion, maybe more dynamic stretching would be better, because then you're just warming up within that full range of motion before you do an activity. So before an athletic event, something like that, I encourage warm up and then dynamic stretching. And I actually stay away from static stretching. But during the week, when you're training, things like that, to maintain or get to your normal range of motion, I do static stretching.
So maybe if, you know, like you have like some people that are kind of like Gumbies that can like bend their hand like backwards and touch their forearm and they can do the splits and they're just super, super flexible, you know, it might not be as important for them. But for someone like me who's fairly tight, has tight hamstrings, tight hip flexors, and, you know, it's probably more important. Or is it important for everyone? Or is it just important for people like me, would you say?
So I think static stretching is important for people like you with decreased range of motion. Some okay. form of stretching, something to get you to within that available range of motion. For someone who already has that range of motion, the Gumby that you're talking about, or even hyper range of motion, more than normal, I'd recommend dynamic stretching, where you're just staying within that normal range of motion. You're warming up your tissues. You're getting those muscles moving within that available range. Mm-hmm. So for example, with a bike, maybe you're doing, you know, 0 to 100 degrees of range of motion at the hip, or maybe let's just say 100 degrees that you're moving through your range. Great. Maybe you want, but your available range might be like 130 or 140. So dynamic stretching should run you through that full range of motion. Whereas because just on a bike, you're only going to be doing a percentage of that full range of motion.
Okay. And what about, what would you say the effect static stretching has on like injury prevention, or I've even heard people say it might cause injuries.
Yeah, great question. So if you're creating a hypermobility, you're introducing injury. There's very few studies out there that show, well, I should say this. There's studies out there that show static stretching does not cause injury and static stretching does cause injury. But the studies are very, not all of them are really well done. A lot of them have a low percentage of a group, for example, maybe not just young cyclists. They might be older cyclists. And then they're trying to apply that to a younger group. So you have to take all the research with a grain of salt. But with that said, if you're going beyond an available range of motion, yeah, it can cause damage. Also, if you're overstressing a stretch, like I said, ballistic stretching, right? You're trying to get a lot of range of motion in a very short period of time. Doesn't work that well. I'd rather have low force over a long period of time is going to prevent that. damage. Give you an example, plantar fasciitis. Okay, not a muscle, but it's a connective tissue. If I stretch over a long period of time, I might be able to impact that with low force over a long period of time. But if I was to try to go in and stretch it really aggressively at the beginning, I may not get as good of a result and actually cause an inflammatory phase.
Okay. And that makes me think of another question too. Like, what are you actually stretching? Like the muscles, like someone that's like really tight and needs to stretch, is it their muscles that need stretching, or is it more connective tissue, or is it like kind of everything that needs to be stretched? Like, what are you actually stretching when you stretch?
All of the above. So what, as I said earlier, you know, when you stretch, you can stretch nerves, you can stretch blood vessels, you can stretch muscle, you can stretch the fascia surrounding the muscle. Any of that can be stretched at any specific time. There's even some evidence to show that fascia, which is basically connective tissue, has cells in it that actually can contract, not just it being connected to the muscle, but within it, myofibroblasts can actually connect to it and have some contractility, not enough to hold you up into a position, but enough to influence how your muscles act on that fashion. So all of the above, Dan. It's hard to specifically tease out, like, I'm just going to stretch muscle. I'm just going to stretch, for example, ligaments. You can stretch ligaments if you really needed to around a joint capsule, if your capsule was tight. But that's something you really wouldn't want to do because it's providing stability. So it's the key, stay within your available range of motion. Try not to go beyond.
Okay. And what ultimately limits your available range of motion?
For you, I think it's muscle. Your muscles get tight, your fascia around those muscles isn't moving as well as it could be. So that would be a muscular component, really. Around each joint, we have what we call a joint capsule. So you have two bones, those two bones come together. And around each of those bones, you have a capsule that goes around them and basically holds them together. If an area of that capsule gets stressed, we call those ligaments. Okay. There's other ligaments too, but those are the majority of them are defined by the capsule. Now, if that capsule becomes tight, even if your muscles were loose, when you go to move that muscle or move the bones, if that capsule is restricting that motion, then it has nothing to do with the muscle, then you would be restricting, the capsule would be what is restricting that motion. So there's different techniques you can use to stretch different aspects, but you never can totally isolate one from the other.
Okay. And one thing I've wondered too is like, is foam rolling a substitute for stretching? Does it accomplish the same thing? Does it lengthen muscles or lengthen connective tissue? Or is it something completely different? And yeah, maybe just talk about that for a sec.
Yeah, you know, foam rolling's interesting. I think it has more than just a benefit of like lengthening tissue. Okay, so I'm going to give you an example here a little bit. Hopefully it makes sense. So when I statically stretch a muscle, I basically grab two ends of that muscle and I pull it apart. Okay. Now with foam rolling, what I'm doing is I typically are stressing a muscle. And then within that muscle, so let's say I'm stretching the muscle here with this pencil, is my muscle, and I'm pulling it apart. And then with the foam roller, what I'm going to do is I'm going to actually push down in the middle of that. So I'm tensioning it on both sides and I'm pushing it down in the middle. So it's actually creating this almost like rolling dough, right? where you're creating tension between the two ends, and then you're rolling across the structure to help, you know, lengthen it or help relieve stress in it.
Okay, yeah, so that's a good analogy, because rolling dough makes the dough longer.
Right.
Yeah, that's okay.
But if you took the dough, you took a thing of dough and you just stretched it, it would tear apart, right?
Mm-hmm.
But as you roll it, you can actually change the tissue, because you can, especially if you tension a little bit on each end and then roll it, it helps to, it would help to lengthen that to a certain degree. And studies do show that using foam rolling before activity actually can increase the range of motion for that activity. So, and the other thing it does, when you roll dough, Dan, is the bottom of the dough and the top of the dough moving at the same rate?
No.
No, right? So when I stretch something and I'm stretching it, I'm really pulling at the top and the bottom very similarly. But if I roll dough, the bottom is and the top are moving at different rates. So it's actually creating kind of this, I don't want to say friction in a negative way, but creating this side-to-side motion within the tissue. So every muscle, in fact, every cell of every muscle has fascia around it. And by creating this like movement within those tissues, you're creating an effect inside the muscle that they, in all honesty, I think is really what foam rolling, when people do it, they feel better. And mm-hmm. I think a lot of that is due to the actual movement within the muscle, not just between the two ends of the muscle.
Okay. And you just mentioned muscle fascia, and that's something you do kind of hear a lot about lately. I don't know. Can you, like, what is that? And like, is the is that part of why we foam rolled? Is, I mean, because it kind of makes, you kind of hear a lot about muscle fascia now, and that like it gets like kind of bound and tight and it needs to be released or something. And is that, was there a lot of credibility to that, or what would you say about that?
Yeah. So first thing I want to say is fascia would be really, it's really hard to stretch, right? It's really hard to, if I pull on fascia, a lot of people are familiar with IT band, right? The iliotibial band, it runs down the lateral side of the thigh. It's this thick band of fascia. To actually stretch that and make a difference or lengthen it is very difficult. So, however, to move that fascia with in relation to the muscles and the structures on each side of it, that's where you can actually make a difference. So let's talk a little bit about fascia. Fascia is what holds us together. So the space shuttle blew up years and years ago, and body parts were just thrown for, you know, long, long distances, but they were able to find whole torsos and parts of the bodies as they fell from the sky. And it was a very tragic event, by the way, but it's a good example of how strong, how much force was created and how strong our body is to hold all of our tissues together. Now, what holds all of those tissues together? Well, around the bone, we have a covering. It's called periosteum. I think most people have heard of periosteum. Okay. Now, from that periosteum, that actually creates envelopes that are around our muscles and around our nerves and around our arteries. And it breaks our muscles into different compartments. So that's all part of that deep fascia. Then from that deep fascia, it is connected to what we call the superficial fascia. So everything from the muscle out. And we have these interwoven connective tissue pieces that go up and go all the way out to the skin. So our body is connected from the skin cells all the way to the bone cells with this fascia. Now, a lot of people hear about muscular fascia or nerve fascia, and they break it up into different components. But really, there's this superficial fascia, which is everything from the muscle superficial, and everything from below the fat is what we refer to as deep fascia. There's other fascias like parietal and visceral fascias around the organs, but we're not going to go into those. But regardless, this fascia envelopes these cells, envelopes the muscles, and in different areas it becomes thicker, especially if it's stressed. Well, the fascia needs to move on each other, and it needs to move in relation to other tissues. If due to inflammation, that fascia is restricted, or due to lack of use or lack of range of motion, things like that, then we create this binding that could decrease performance and increase pain. Pain, a lot more research needs to be go into fascia. We don't know enough about it. But there's disorders where fascial disorders where it really impacts joint mobility, things like that. So it's really a connective tissue that connects our whole body together, and it needs to work in concert so that we can have full range of motion, full mobility, and exercise without pain.
It's kind of like a flexible, excuse me, it's kind of like a flexible rebar in our body or something that kind of holds us together. I don't know.
Yeah, absolutely. But I would say individually, it's not that flexible, but it's flexible between the different layers.
Okay.
It'd be like two pieces of rebar moving on each other.
And so if you're getting a massage, is that what massage is all about? Is that why massage helps you feel better? Is massage actually helping the muscle, or is it helping the fascia, or both, or what?
Yeah. So there's different levels of massage. When someone's just kind of, you know, gently, they call it, I think, effleurage, but if they're just gently moving the skin, you're not doing a ton in relation to the muscle work, right? But it still feels good. Right? Mm-hmm. So when we talk about massage, I wouldn't really talk about it in regards to that type of massage. What I'm talking about is the massage that's not very comfortable, and where they actually get in and manipulate the muscles and move them back and forth. So very similar to foam rolling, you're pushing down on the muscle, you're kind of pushing that out. The two layers of the muscle, or everything within the muscle, is moving at different rates. So you're actually within the muscle making a difference. Massage is doing something very similar to that.
Okay. And how important do you think, like, a foam rolling or a massage type program would be for like our youth athletes? Is this something that would benefit them, or is it more something that would benefit like an old guy like me that can't really move very well? Like,
yeah, I think it can benefit everyone to a certain degree if there's pathology. If your motor is running fine, you really don't need to do a lot to it to maintain it. Right. But if you have inflammation, or you have decreased range of motion, or you have adhesions within your fascial layers, foam rolling could be very useful. It could be very useful for to increase that, you know, to be a tool to help increase that range of motion. It's also nice to help warm up the tissues. For example, maybe a warm up, do a little foam rolling and some dynamic stretching before an activity is going to make someone feel better. To do foam rolling after an activity or to cool down is another thing that could be very useful. But you're not actually changing your range of motion or anything like that, but you're still benefiting from doing that. And there's studies that show that people foam roll after exercise have decreased muscle discomfort. And that's probably because they're going in and loosening these fascial layers up after they've exercised for a long period of time. So yes, it's helping them feel better. Is it really making a difference with their range of motion? Something like that? Probably not.
Okay.
But it could help decrease the inflammatory response.
So if it makes you feel better, it's probably a good thing.
Pretty much.
Are there any downsides or or risks, or can it be overdone? Or
foam rolling, not so much. Massage can be overdone. Some people get very aggressive. And I do feel like it's called Rolfing. People who are really good at it can really make a difference for deeper muscles. But I do think it can be overdone and cause bruising and inflammation. So in regards to foam rolling, though, it's really self-driven. There isn't someone else doing it. So you can really be the
judge of if it's too much.
Yeah.
What about the pulse massagers? Is that
very similar to self myofascial release, like foam rolling, something like that? You're affecting the tissue at that one little level, right? So you might tension it, and then the pulses are just pushing down on the muscle, very similar to how a foam roller would be doing it.
Okay. So I'd like to have you back soon and talk more specifically about how to prevent like knee pain and common things that cause like knee pain on the bike. I think that would be pretty in depth and take a lot of time, but what are some stretches or foam rolling thing? What are some things that you think that like, if someone's listening to this that they're interested in trying out, what are some things you would recommend that they maybe do as part of their like daily routine that you think might alleviate some common pain problems that people have on the bike?
Yeah. So a lot of people just get on their bike and go full bore. I'm guilty. I know you're guilty.
I'm not guilty. I don't. You're definitely guilty of that though.
Yeah. I'm not very good at warming up, and it's always important to warm up. I'd say ride 5-10 minutes at very low impact, very low force production. Then do some dynamic stretching, do some kicks, do some lunges, things like that to really help warm up those layers in the full available range of motion. And then ride hard. I think if you got into doing that regularly, that would help prevent inflammatory responses due to stressing the tissue before it's warmed up. Foam rolling after exercise, and even before, as long as you include dynamic stretching with it, I think foam rolling after exercise is always a good thing. I think it helps to decrease the stress in the muscles, helps the person decrease stress, and also cool down. The other thing I'd really recommend doing is having cool down after a ride. A lot of times we race as fast as we can to the car and see if we can beat our buddy. And then we just stop. And then we sit down on the ground and have a snack. I'd really recommend after doing that, go for, 5 to 10 minute ride where it's just low cadence, or it could even be high cadence, just low force production, just to let the muscles relax. And you're not just stopping immediately. And so that could help with some of that inflammatory response. But the one big take home, Dan, I would like people to realize is everything's connected. So for example, if you have tight hamstrings and you go into, you bend at the hip, those tight hamstrings are going to try to make that pelvis roll backwards or toward posteriorly. Well, if you're doing this, at the cadence of 80 or 100, you're constantly taking the pelvis and you're doing this with it, right? You're not really stabilizing the pelvis to have the muscles act on it, because you're trying to fight these tight muscles or this tight, you don't have full range of motion. That's when I start to see problems happening, for example, at the low back. So the hamstrings are connected clear down to below your knee, your shank, then they go all the way up to your pelvis. Then as your pelvis is rocking, then it's going to start to rock your low back. And then people start to end up with low back pain. So just knowing that whatever is happening at one joint is impacting the other joints, and to not be like, oh, my back hurts, so I'm just going to foam roll my back. Okay. It's probably not coming from your back. So to be aware of like where it's coming from. The other take home message is to test and retest. So everyone's unique. So for some people, foam rolling works better than others. Dynamic stretching works better than others. So do stuff and do it not just once and see how you feel, but do it over and over and over and see if you continually get better or continually feel better. And if you don't, switch it up.
Yeah, absolutely. Because like when I've gone to Bo with knee trouble and hip trouble, it's always interesting how he starts looking at like my hip flexors and my hamstrings and my mobility and my hamstrings, and you know, not focusing on like exactly where I'm hurting, because it's really kind of an up or downstream effect. So yeah, that's awesome. And both, I just think this is so awesome, because really, like I said earlier, this sport is so much more fun and so much more sustainable if your body feels good while you're doing it. And if it doesn't, go find someone that can help you figure out why, you know. And sometimes it might take multiple tries and even multiple different experts to help you solve a more complex problem. But it's definitely worth figuring out. And I just think this has been really fascinating, because like it's something I deal with, because I am fairly tight. I always have to stretch and foam roll, and you know, because I guess just that's kind of how I'm put together. I don't know, but
yeah, genetics plays a role. Some people are just a little bit.
I'm not right. A Gumby, that's for sure.
No, you are not.
Do you have any questions, Joe?
I think the last question I'd have for you, Bo, is something that I've thought a lot about and I worry a lot about with the kids that we're working with, is like where to get good information about like health in your body from. Because we've done a whole episode on like TikTok and YouTube and Instagram are just full of like bad advice and people who don't know what they're talking about. Practically speaking, what do you think is the best way to get good science-driven advice about your body and what you should do with it? And then what are some, you know, what are some things that you can look for to tell whether or not information is good?
Yeah, always look at the resource. For example, you could have someone who's an expert in one field, but it doesn't necessarily carry over to the other. So look at the people's expertise in their area. I think that's important, especially with high-level athletes. I might treat someone different if they're a high-level athlete who has very, you know, has good endurance, has very good muscle quality, versus someone who's elderly and maybe sedentary. So realizing that it's not a cookbook, right? It doesn't, you don't put the ingredients in and always come out with the right same product. Each person is an individual. So you need to really go to the person who's an expert in that area. And we're lucky in Salt Lake City. We have so many experts in the Wasatch Front in specific areas that I think is important. But looking at where the information is coming from, I think that's probably the key. If it's, you know, and I'm not saying just because someone has a PhD behind their name makes them smart. It doesn't necessarily. In fact, it can sometimes make them dumber. So that's definitely not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is look at their experience. Look at what their outcomes of what they're doing have been. And for example, someone might be really good at weightlifting and might be good at building power lifters. Great. They have great qualities for that sport, but you can't directly apply that to a cycling athlete who's very lean, lean muscle mass, high repetition, low force over a long period of time, endurance athletes. So that's kind of what I'm getting at there, Joe, is really go towards the area of expertise. And there's some good stuff on YouTube, but sorting it out is hard. Look at for resources at Mayo Clinic, University of Utah, Cleveland Clinic, resources, medical resources that are really good. If you go to see a specialist and you're under 18 years old, find a pediatric specialist, because you're a kid's, someone who's under 18 still growing is going to respond different to activity versus someone who is fully grown. There's gender differences between tissues. I was talking to an orthopedic surgeon the other day who does a lot of surgery on hips. And he's like, yes, the morphology of the bones is different. I have to treat these patients differently. So really look at the outcomes.
Excellent. Something you wanted to add?
No, not really. I think that's great. And this is, I've just enjoyed this so much because I always, every time I go to Bo, I just learned so much, and he's truly just an expert among experts. So thanks so much, Bo, for doing this. And we'd love to have you back on to talk more about knees. And that seems to be a big problem for a lot of people. And, but we're lucky to have you as a resource, and thanks so much for taking your time today and helping us out. This has been amazing. I've loved this. So,
well, I believe in Neighbor and what you guys are doing. So thanks for all your efforts here.
Well, we sure appreciate you, Bo.
You bet.
Well, if anybody has any questions, send them our way. If there's anything that you guys specifically, you know, would love to do this with Bo again, if there's anything within his realm of expertise that you guys would be interested in knowing about, please tell us. We had a whole bunch of questions 1 week and then they've dried up again. So let us know what you guys need. I look forward to seeing everybody down here again next week for the iCup. People going to be out in California. And like Dan said, the weather's getting better. It's Utah. We'll probably have one more snowstorm. But get out and ride. Everybody be safe. And we will look forward to talking to you guys next week.